Well, it never really slows down for JMU sports, even as we get into May today. First of May, as we record this episode of Purple and Bold podcast from the Daily News Record. I'm Shane Metlin here again with Katie Harper in the DNR newsroom. Yesterday, we got the, I don't know, what qualifies as the official introduction for the athletic director. He's had a few different things where he's made public appearances and been hired and introduced. But yesterday was his press conference at the Atlantic Union Bank Center. Matt Roan, in as the JMU AD, was Jeff Bourne's last day. So that transition has actually happened now. We move into a new era of JMU sports as the previous era continues to kind of roll on with spring sports all nearing the postseason now. A lot going on. Let's start with recapping a little bit of on the diamond. Baseball was in action again last night. A game that unexpectedly was both, you know, very competitive, hardly fought, a lot of runs, a rain delay. Everything led to a long night at the ballpark for Katie as she watched JMU hold off Georgetown, get another win, and stay in the hunt for an NCAA tournament berth.
Yeah, I should have known it was going to be a long day when I saw the 5 p.m. start time, and my first thought was, wow, I'm going to get home an hour earlier than I usually do, because usually they've been starting at 6. I cursed myself, and it should have been a sign, too, when I was driving over to the ballpark from Matt Roan's introductory press conference, and the notification already comes through that Georgetown had hit traffic, and the start time was being pushed back about 20 minutes. So long, I knew it was going to be a long night from the start too. JMU started scoring runs early, go up 6-0. Someone in the press box may or may not have mentioned a run rule. That apparently and obviously did not happen. And they scored, JMU and Georgetown scored about every way you could score without maybe like an inside the park home run. It was a well-played offensive game. I would say the pitching for JMU was definitely something that was a little iffy at times. You know, they had Casey Smith start the game. He looked good early, kind of hit a wall in the third inning. And Eikenberry brought in some freshmen. One of them gave up a grand slam in the rain. So how much of that is weather? How much of it is maybe the wrong pitch? Not 100% sure. And it's going back and forth for a while. I think one of the big moments of the game, though, was coming out of the rain delay. JMU was back out in front at that point. But they came back in with the bases, with Georgetown bases loaded, two outs in the top of the sixth inning. And I think it really showed the faith and belief that Eikenberry had in freshman Jackson Logar, that he sent him out into that, needing just one out to get them out of that jam. And he did it. He did it on, I think, three pitches. It was a strike, maybe another strike or a ball, and then a ground out. So great performance at that moment from Logar. He comes back in the next inning and pitches really well again. And Eikenberry had even said after the game, that was not their original plan, thanks to the weather. He was hoping to roll out Hunter Ensminger in that bases loaded jam. And he had him warming up. Lightning struck quite literally mid at bat for a Georgetown player, and it threw off the pitching a little bit, but from Logar and Vogatsky at the end, it looked good.
Yeah, for JMU, it's another midweek victory, another home win, as they improved to 19-4 at Veterans Memorial Park. Heading into this weekend in the Sun Belt, they're 25-18, 11-10 in Sun Belt play. RPI now up to 28 again, once again in the top 30, going up a couple spots with yesterday's victory. And RPI becomes something to monitor almost daily for this team now, as they're kind of there in the bubble talk. I guess it depends on really who you look at too, as far as, you know, baseball bracketology, because I've seen some that have JMU as a solid 3 in, you know, various regionals. Others, you know, have them kind of on the bubble as, you know, one of the last teams in, one of the last teams out. It's going to be interesting to end the regular season. And the baseball regular season goes on a little longer than softball regular season. So they've got three series left, two that they should be able to take, if not sweep. If they don't, it's going to be a disappointment. And then the finishing up at Troy is looking pretty huge, as Troy is now on a huge roll, swept Coastal Carolina, and is solidly in second place in the Sun Belt.
JMU needs to find a way to win on the road, and I feel like we've said that for the last several weeks. But then, you know, they go on the road and they have a matchup that should be favorable. They should be able to get two, maybe three, and then they only get one. So the that finale at Troy, they need to get a win or two at that one. Because watching this team, when they're playing at home, I think it's hard to argue against them being a regional-level team. I think they could go to a regional, and everything gets a little weird in regionals with the double elimination and things like that. So I think this is a team that could compete well in a regional, depending on where they go. But I think to do that, you need to go into that last series against Troy and win a couple on the road. And then on top of that, you need to handle business when you're at home over these next couple of weeks, when you have Arkansas State and Marshall, which are two programs that you really should be winning the series. And like you said, probably sweeping at times. And I think this is a team that, depending on where they land, can make things interesting. Obviously, I know sometimes regionals are exactly that, and they try and put them in an area where it's close to them. And there are a lot of good baseball teams that JMU, if they made a regional, they could end up at. They could end up in a SEC regional very quickly. I know there's one right down the road with Tennessee is probably going to be hosting a regional and potentially a super regional if they win. So that's one that, you know, who knows? JMU could go down there. They went down to Knoxville a few years ago and won a game. So they've already won an SEC game this year. So I think it's a team that deserves to be in a regional. But judging by how these brackets can get made, I think they do need another win or two on the road.
All right. Well, let's just say it for the NCAA, because I'm sure they're listening to this. The selection committee, if JMU is a tournament team, put them in Charlottesville. The atmosphere there would be just absolutely incredible. Like, you want to have fun postseason, just do it. Put them in Charlottesville for that regional. That would be, we know what that's like when JMU teams go over to UVA to compete. When UVA hosts regionals to begin with, it's a great atmosphere. They sell tickets. They've got a great ballpark. Put JMU in Charlottesville if they end up being an NCAA tournament team. All I'm saying is because, like, you want that kind of atmosphere for your postseason events. But what JMU's got to do to get there, we can take a closer look at that. Georgetown, you know, on paper, you don't necessarily think of being a baseball powerhouse, but they come in yesterday. They had an RPI of 63 going into that game. So it's not a bad it's not an inconsequential win for JMU baseball wise, but they're going into a couple weeks, like you said, they've proven they can win at home. They usually win at home, and it'll be a huge disappointment if they go into the next couple of weeks against Arkansas State and Marshall towards the bottom of the Sun Belt. Marshall 1-19 on the road this season. Arkansas State struggling. Those teams with RPIs right around 200. JMU should be able to kind of boost that win total here in the next couple of weeks. But then, like you said, they've got to prove something on the road with Virginia Tech, a midweek game, followed by that Troy series where Troy is on fire. Troy's up to a top 50 RPI at this point. They've got to finish strong if they're going to be an NCAA tournament team without winning the Sun Belt tournament.
Yeah, I think to do that too, I know we've said it in the past, they need to get more consistent pitching across the board. Offense is there. They're hitting the ball well. Every player or every batter yesterday for JMU had at least a hit, and that included Jacob Steinberg, who came in and only had one at bat. He got a hit. So that's there. That's strong. But this pitching right now, you have two, three guys that I would say have been consistent pretty much all year. And outside of that, it's a program that they've lacked consistency on Friday nights. They've lacked consistency on Sundays. They've had the consistency on Saturday. Midweek games have been kind of hit or miss depending on the week. And so to get pitching, to get these wins, you need better pitching out of all of your guys, more so than just maybe one weekend starter and one reliever. Because if you look at it, especially in recent weeks, Hunter Ensminger has been really, really good out of the bullpen. He's been really consistent. Max Kuhl has moved from a starting role into the bullpen. He's been good when needed. Vogatsky is one of the top. He's a midseason finalist for a top reliever, so he's been good. You have Burke, who's been really good as a starter. But then there have been some guys that have just kind of been hit or miss as the season's gone on. Todd Mazzocchi had a really not great start to the year. He's kind of come back in the recent weeks and been pitching well. So you need just steady pitching at this time of the year, especially for this team to really be able to make a difference at the end of the season and then possibly into regional play.
Yeah, and I think those road victories seem to carry a lot of weight. They do with RPI. I would assume that they're going to with the committee as they look at RPI. Because I think it's safe to say the committee's not watching everybody play consistently because that's just impossible in college baseball. So that one victory at Arkansas, RPI number two right now, has to be carrying a lot of weight for JMU to be a top 30 program with their overall record and their struggles on the road. You look at that, and then they finish with four top 50 road games. That Virginia Tech one's going to be huge. And I think you kind of got to just lump it all together. Like, you want to win that series, but if you go 2-2 in those four, I think that's, you know, probably enough to give you a bump overall. You know, obviously what other people do factors in. There's a whole other equation outside of what JMU does. But I think finishing strong, winning the games that they ought to win here over the next 2 weeks and then finishing at least 2-2 in the last four would give them a pretty good opportunity to end up playing in the postseason.
And technically, this could be exactly like basketball where we're talking about all of this. Are they in? Are they not in? And you never know. JMU could just go down to the Sun Belt tournament and win it and get that automatic bid. So we'll see. But I think this is definitely a team that obviously I would say they're definitely not going to enter the Sun Belt tournament favored to win it. They could. You never know. But I still think it's a team that has earned a spot in regional play.
Yeah. Team that right now is not earning that is probably, you know, the softball team. Last time we were in here, fairly high on them. They were on a winning streak. I think they'd won eight in a row at one point, and then a really, really disappointing sweep at Georgia Southern for JMU softball. I mean, there's no real way to sugarcoat it. They were playing well. They were moving up the standings and then back down to sixth, I believe, now after losing three straight there. That was a series, I think, everyone kind of expected them to win going in, and they get swept. That's a rough result for the JMU softball team, as they were showing some promise with their young players starting to really come around.
Yeah, that one, I know it seems so weird how much changed in just 1 week, because we were talking about, you know, it's a young team. You know, they're probably not going to be in regional play this year, but it could help them build to next year. And then to just go on that and lose all three games, it's definitely a knockdown. And it's one of those, like you said, with it being a young team, that it can hurt some confidence early if they're losing those games. But it's definitely, I think, to get them home for one more home series, I think that will kind of definitely kind of help them maybe into a Sun Belt tournament look and help them grow into it and maybe get some confidence back. Because yeah, that weekend series was definitely one that you expect them to win at least a game, not to get swept.
Yeah, they're down to number 65 in RPI, and the Sun Belt remains a solid softball league. I think a multi-bid league this year, with Louisiana and Texas State, both top 25 teams. But you know, for JMU, that's a tough result down at Georgia Southern. They're just the consistency in the pitching has been an issue, I think, especially with control. You know, they walk a lot of people. They have some wild pitches that has cost them at times. So there's some issues to work out there. But like I said, this wasn't necessarily the year where you're expecting a big run out of them. But it's disappointing that I think what looked like a lot of momentum going in towards the end of the season maybe got halted a little bit, and we'll see what they can do before the Sun Belt tournament, because that comes up much quicker in softball than it does in baseball. They'll be in the postseason before you know it. Along other spring sports, lacrosse, their season kind of chugs along. It's been for as close as that, it's hard to kind of talk about lacrosse and know exactly, you know, where to put them. Would they played such a tough schedule early. Their conference schedule outside of Florida is not going to challenge them quite as much. And, you know, they continue to kind of drop in the rankings after nearly being number one early in the season. And then they continue to win, but they're just not resume type of victories at this point in the season. How important will the AAC tournament be for them, especially if they can get another shot at Florida on a neutral field?
I think it will be huge. Like you said, I mean, they've been winning and they're still falling in the standings just because of the games that they've been playing of late. And there was that bump in the middle of the season with like UVA loss, Johns Hopkins loss, those big losses that I think are going to sit with them for a while. The Maryland loss is another one too. So I think it is really hard to kind of judge what this team is right now. Really good at attack when they can score. There have been some teams that have kind of limited them early. Maryland did a really, really good job to keep JMU off the score sheet. So I think it will be – I think they need to get another game against Florida. I think they'll be fine in terms of making the NCAA tournament. I don't think that's in question. I think they'll be there. But I think to be prepared for it, I think they need to beat Temple in the first round of the AAC tournament to then get possibly another shot at Florida. Obviously, Florida has to win too. But that will be major in at least getting them somewhat prepared for the tougher opponents that they'll face in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and I think those losses that you talked about, like maybe the disappointing thing is that it kind of took away the opportunity to host in the early rounds of the NCAA tournament, which looks to definitely be on the table early on in the season, especially opening with a win against North Carolina and the way they were just really hammering teams early on. You know, now even if they get another shot at Florida, can beat Florida, I'm not sure they get to the point where they're hosting an NCAA tournament game, which after doing that last year, taking advantage of that to advance to the Sweet 16, I think that's got to be looked at fairly disappointing because it gets harder. Like it gets a lot harder when you go on the road to play those ranked teams, and they've seen that. And, you know, that was a hill they couldn't quite get over between 2018 and last year. And the common thread between those deep NCAA tournament runs was starting at Sentara Park.
Yeah, like you said, too, even if they get another shot at Florida and say they win it, Florida right now is on the border of potentially hosting a game. So I think it is kind of a bummer for them that, you know, you start the season with that North Carolina win. It's so exciting. It's overtime. It's close. It's well fought, to now being faced with the possibility and in all likelihood heading on the road early in the NCAA tournament. It's definitely a bummer. I think there are still things that they're excited about. I know like today the conference teams were released. Ava Bleckley was the unanimous freshman of the year. She has been absolutely unreal on defense all year. And then there are seven other of her teammates that make either first or second team, all AAC. So there's still obviously good players on this team, good players who know how to win. It does just get a little bit harder when you have to go on the road.
Yeah, and, you know, to transition into talking about the Matt Roan hire at AD, you know, one thing he may have to look at, you know, of the long list of things that, you know, we haven't even had a chance to ask him about, you know, what happens with lacrosse conference-wise as the Big 12 starts women's lacrosse. Some of those AAC teams, including Florida, are going to go there. It leaves JMU in a weaker league. You got to wonder if the American is the long-term solution for JMU lacrosse as far as, you know, their conference home. But that'll be something that comes across Matt's desk soon enough, I think, as he gets started. You know, you got to attend the press conference. You know, we heard him talk. We heard him talk about, you know, his family, his history, a lot of things. What were your kind of initial impressions of the real first first time you got to kind of hear him speak and address him a little bit?
Yeah, it was interesting. Like, obviously, Jeff Bourne has been the face for so long. A lot of us know him. I covered him in college and then coming back and covering him. So it was what really stuck out to me first was Matt Roan talking about meeting Jeff Bourne several years ago and keeping him as a mentor. He did joke, he's like, you know, there's not much wisdom I can impart on him. He's been around for 25 years at this one institution and led it very well. But he did say I learned a lot from him, and he was someone I could always text and ask a question to. So that definitely stood out. And I think just his understanding of the school and of the area will definitely be something that benefits the program. He talked about it quite a bit yesterday that, you know, he didn't come to JMU. He didn't get recruited by Mickey Matthews to play football at JMU, but he still had his eye on the school. He still knew about the school. He knew about the success. And then even, you know, in the last year or so, you couldn't turn on the TV and watch anything about college sports without kind of hearing about JMU and its successes. So I think those are the two things that really stood out was his eye on the school and just kind of having Jeff Bourne on the side as a mentor, because obviously he has done his job very, very well for a quarter of a century and is now officially retired.
Yeah. You know, he's officially retired. You know, after 25 years, and that's an incredible run as an AD, and he pointed out that, you know, how often is it that the outgoing athletic director is on the stage with the guy who's replacing him? Because usually he's been kicked to the curb, you know, in those situations, or he's bolted for somewhere else, or, you know, there's not an actual passing of the torch that often in the AD's office. And that was one of the things I asked, you know, Matt Roan about, you know, when he kind of broke off and talked a little bit afterwards, is like, you know, I've got specific questions about specific things, but, you know, this hasn't happened at JMU in 25 years. So I actually have no idea, like, what are the things that come across your desk in the first couple of weeks? Is there, what is immediately have to be addressed, and what are things that, like, you've got to get to? And, you know, talked a little bit about that. And, you know, I asked him specifically about stadium expansion at Bridge Four, things like that. And without, you know, making any promises, he made it pretty clear that that's something he's already been discussing with people. And it is something that, you know, they're looking into. But when I brought it up, you know, among a lot of other things, I really didn't know, you know, okay, so this has not happened at JMU. So what is the transition period like, and what happens in the first few weeks, first few months, even the first year? Because there's a lot to address.
Yeah, I know the stadium expansion was the big one. That's just on everybody's mind. And I'm really tempted to out myself on this one because I know people are going to yell at me on social media. I love the small side of the Bridgeport Stadium bleachers. I think it's a great place to watch a football game. So I'm not going to lie, seeing all the talk about expanding the stadium does make me just a little bit sad because I do love those bleachers. But I mean, even in what you pointed out, there are just so many logistical things about expanding the stadium, the locker rooms at Godwin, things like that. So it's, and I liked how you phrased it yesterday in the press conference with kind of comparing it to a president of the country's first 100 days and what they want to accomplish, because it is just such, and we have said it so many times, it is such an interesting time to take over this athletic department with everything that's changing in college athletics, everything that's just changing at the school and as a whole. So I think just kind of keeping an eye on him, watching how he handles this next few months, especially over the summer, will be interesting to see. Because again, something like the stadium expansion, I know a lot of fans want it and they want it now, but it's going to take some time. And I do think that as an athletic director, he's probably looking at me like, okay, well, can we maintain attendance at 25,000, upwards, a little bit higher technically, for a few years before we put that money in to adding who knows how many more seats.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it was less about the specifics of doing it and how it's going to get done and, you know, what that will entail, as much as I was curious to know, like, what his attitude about it was going to be, and if it was something he was going to, like, you know, kind of try to avoid addressing, or if it was something where he was like, you know, excited about. And it definitely seems like something he's excited about. He was particularly excited about learning what he's learned about Charlie King in the last couple days, or, you know, a week or so. You know, he didn't know he was going to become the interim president. He doesn't know for exactly how long he'll be the interim president. But, you know, I think one of the most interesting things that he said to me was, you know, he's interim, but like not in the way that like, okay, everything goes on pause. He's going to be an active president and he's going to get some things done. And we're talking about the guy who got the Atlantic Union Bank Center built, and he got the Forbes Center built, and he got the previous stadium expansion done and the business school and like everything else. Like, he's a guy who's proven he can get things done, and he's not just going to sit in the chair.
No, Charlie King loves JMU. I mean, he has a building named after him for obvious reasons. He has one of the, well, actually, I would, it's like one of the biggest academic buildings on the East Coast named after him. So it's definitely an interesting time with him because, yeah, I don't think Charlie King is someone who can sit by and just kind of let things go smoothly or quietly, because again, this is a guy who technically retired a few years ago, but he's back now to be an interim president. That's a pretty big job to come out of retirement for. So he's definitely someone that I think is going to be very proactive in athletics and over the next few months. I mean, he's someone who helped hire Jeff Bourne. So he definitely loves the athletic department, and I think is definitely going to be willing to walk side by side with Rowan for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's just like a lot of interesting things to like to compare it. The presidency thing we talked about before, like obviously this is not running the entire country, but it's still a very massive undertaking. And it's one where, like, I think the comparison is that this isn't a startup company. You're not building things from scratch. You inherit what you inherit from somebody, and a massive foundation is already there. And then you got to decide what direction you're going with that and how you're building upon that, or if you're tearing anything back and going in a different direction. And it seems like it's a good mix of knowing that there's a great foundation to build upon, but also kind of having your own style. I mean Matt Roan is fairly young to be in the position he's in, you know, with a young family, and you know, he played college football this century. There's not necessarily a ton of ADs that did that, and we're talking about a guy who, you know, no lack of energy or anything from Jeff Bourne, but you know, he's retirement age, and I think there's going to be a difference there, just in that that kind of energy they bring and the ability maybe to connect with younger alumni, potential donors who maybe haven't stepped up to do that yet, or maybe won't be big donors for the next 10 to 15 years, but you're starting to connect with those new graduates and younger alumni and stuff that haven't been a huge part of the Duke Club and things so far.
Yeah, I think it will be interesting because like you said, there is that age difference. Having met Jeff Bourne several times, even for obviously a big age gap between myself and him, he always did seem very easily able to connect with younger people. But at the same time, with the Duke Club, when you have younger alumni, there is kind of that finance gap of like how much they can give maybe compared to an older alumni. But so it will be interesting to see how those relationships change, because even with the age, I will say I do think Bourne was really good at connecting with kind of anybody he met, because he is a very nice, talkative guy. But obviously Matt Roan brings that younger side to it that I think in this time, maybe a younger face is what is needed.
Yeah. I mean, and it's just interesting, like, you know, there's going to be the caravan events and things like this summer where they're going out and trying to meet these people and connect with these people. And, you know, the four people that will be there all of a sudden are, you know, the three coaches, Chesney, Spradlin, O'Regan, and Matt Roan. And they all have kids that are like 10 to 14, and like all of them. And you know, they're going to be able to relate with some people who are maybe in that same situation as a lot of, in a way that possibly the previous group of coaches, like, and administrators and stuff weren't there. It's just going to be a completely different dynamic. It's gotten younger and it's gotten more energetic just if you look at everybody as a whole that are in kind of those most prominent roles at JMU right now.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. Like, even just that group that you mentioned, like, those are all four people that are very approachable, will spend time talking to you. I know, like, I've obviously in the course of the spring was around Chesney quite a bit. So, like, these are, I would say, four people as a university you'd probably want being the face of your athletic department right now and maybe for a little bit, because they are able to connect and they're willing to talk with just about anyone. I mean, even O'Regan, he's out of the group, he's the one who's been here the longest, quite literally. I mean, he went to school here. So it's definitely a group that you want to keep around, hopefully, for a little bit to just kind of bridge that gap and get more people involved.
Yeah, I think those events are going to be very interesting. And, you know, Matt's shown already at Eastern Kentucky, he was a good fundraiser there. He found corporate support and in a similar type of situation where it's, you know, Richmond, Kentucky is not a big city and not like with a ton of corporate infrastructure. And he found, you know, sponsorships and things there, which I think would indicate he can do that at JMU as well. And, you know, getting to meet people, I think the entire Valley is going to have a crush on his wife, Mallory. Like, you know, once they meet her, like in the family and everything else, it's just, you know, they're going to be out there. The coaches are going to be out there more, I think, with the new coaching staffs. And just that whole dynamic, I think, is going to be a little bit different as far as, you know, people were settled in at JMU before. And I think, you know, there's going to be a less feeling, people are going to feel at home, but I don't think there's going to be a less feeling settled where they are, and a little bit more, just a different vibe and a different energy from the faces of the athletic department right now.
Yeah, it's definitely, I don't know how many times we can say, like, it's going to be a fun time to follow, but I think it is. And now, like, now that the pieces are in place, it was so long wondering, who is it going to be? I mean, obviously, Jeff Bourne announced his retirement at the start of the year, so we had several months of just wondering, and then Alger leaving, too. So it was, there were times where it was like, okay, who is going to lead this next group? And now that those faces are there, I think it's definitely, now I think the fun really starts technically of following it. I know some people like kind of following hiring processes and who's going to get the job, but now that those are in place, I think it's definitely a little bit more fun to see what they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, I think that'll just about do it for us this week. The Purple and Bold podcast from the Daily News Record. Once again, you've been listening to me. I'm Shane Metlin here with Katie Harper. And thank you for tuning in.